Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love. And today I am pleased to have Doug Rose, also known as Ten, which is short for Tenzin Karma Trinley. And we will discover how he came to that name in his book, Fearless Puppy on American Road. Ten is also the author of Reincarnation Through Common Sense, where he describes how the rural monks and nuns of a forest temple adopted a troubled soul from Brooklyn and shared their wisdom, love, and compassion, and a greater understanding of what constitutes a life well lived. Hello, Ten.
Hello there, Cheryl. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
You're most welcome, and I'm very excited to have you here today. Ten, you know, as listeners of Healing From Within know, the authors and guests of this show share an understanding of spirituality and energy as a means or vehicle to understand ourselves, the world, and the role energy plays in our expanding soul and world evolution. Spirituality is not a belief system as such, but an opening of the mind and heart to the possibilities for self-investigation and self-mastery of our emotions, traumas, and life challenges, and for helping us make personal choices to live our best life to the best of our ability using the knowledge available to us at any given time. In today's episode of Healing From Within, we will discuss the hitchhiking adventures that you experienced while covering America's highways. You discuss having survived heroin addiction and death, and you are a graduate of over 100,000 miles of travel, never having driven a car, owning a phone, or having a bank account. When we say to find spirit, we need to walk the road of our own destiny and true path. This seems to ideally fit you, and I honor you for your journey and for your trust in life and yourself and what you have experienced. So please, Ten, tell us something about your earlier life or challenges and how it may have led you to follow a path quite different than many others.
Well, I was brought up in Brooklyn and became a teenage drug dealer pretty early in my life. And I knew that had to go away because otherwise I would. I was watching friends die around me all over the place and could see that it was going to come to a bad end. So I started just one day. I got high enough to get out on the highway and stick my thumb out, the highway being the Bell Parkway in Coney Island. And somebody picked me up. The rides went so well that I just kept doing it for 40 years.
I grew up near there in Sheepset Bay. Near,
oh, yeah, right down near, the street, sure.
Right, near the same Belt Parkway. And, you know, a few years after leaving high school, I also found that some of the kids that I had known in high school, popular kids, athletes, intelligent kids, had died. So there was a drug problem in a middle-class neighborhood. And, of course, we still have this in New York and the major cities. It hasn't really gone away. It's just the drugs change and the children change and the times change. But the problems that lead children to do this or young adults is quite the same. So what was it that led you to do those things at that early age?
I think America, maybe the whole world, America being in the forefront because, we're bigger and more publicized and more pronounced about it. But there's this, you were talking before about spirituality and energy and how we use them. I would take it a step further. We are our spirituality and energy.
Yes.
That has got covered up by so many layers of caca that people are out of touch with themselves and been going on for a very long time. It's the beginning of industrialization, probably, because when people were just out on the farm, they were a lot more in touch with nature, and it made it easier to coordinate life. But when you get things happening like, you know, we see today, and we did even when we were growing up to a somewhat lesser extent, the constant barrage on the news, I mean, the human central nervous system was not designed to take on every disaster in the world in a half an hour. And they pack that in, and this is what people watch because this is what people get conditioned to. They keep it coming on the TV because it pumps up your adrenaline, which gets you paying more attention to the advertisements, which is all they care about is selling you stuff you don't need. And, you know, it's not just the media. Every place, schools, churches, jobs, the whole fear-based mentality that causes people to cover up instead of opening up,
yes,
I think has been a big problem and continues to be and grows, you know,
yeah,
as a problem.
So there you hit on a very important aspect of the socialization process, materialism, a highly technological society powered towards having and getting rather than powered towards sharing and cooperation and giving away of your heart and love, which is what nature shows us in a cooperative natural environment. People are not as stressed. They are not as fearful. They are probably not in that vibration of lower energy or negativity, anger and fear and other emotions, which tend to make us think in terms of our ego or mindset and not in terms of our inner essence or spiritual nature, which is our true being and which can propel us to do so much good and to share so much love and good things in the world. Now we're going to get back to the 1960s, which produced a widespread cultural revolution, and you wrote that LSD was its sponsor. Music and philosophical mysticism were its parents, and you were its child. And you also wrote, the Earth's best energy was exploding as a love fest created by a progressive youth that thought it was in the process of building a new world. And I remember those times, too. Tell us of that time and energy and how you fit into it and how you didn't fit into it and the new world that we anticipated then and still has not completely been realized even yet. So tell us a little bit of that.
Well, it's not that that period in history was perfect. Obviously, there was a whole lot wrong going on there. But at least there was, amongst the youth anyways, a spirit of cooperation and progressive movement. Now, over the last 50 years, that's been kind of beaten out of us by materialism, constant war. The war has never stopped. And all the other news and all the other fear-mongering propaganda that we get fed from almost every direction. But at least at that time, there was progress made in women's rights and gay rights and civil rights and stopping the war in Vietnam. There was a hopefulness. We could see that things were moving in a positive direction. And that made people more optimistic and more willing. They felt like they weren't alone in getting up and trying to do something constructive, because there were some of those constructive things getting done on a very broad scale. Of course, there are constructive things getting done today, but I don't think it equals the magnitude of what was going on then. And truthfully, my books and my life, I don't think, could have happened at any other time in history, because that spirit was so around everyone.
What you
That
say
there was a
is, Ten, what you say is the most idealistic among us try to look out and find kindred spirits. And because we wanted to really include everyone in the human race, because that's what we are. We are energy beings having a physical life, and we are more alike than we are different. And finding the similarity is the way to forging forward a better world. Now, I myself at the time, I was caught up in the system of production and the status quo that you talked about 20 years later, when I realized the universal nature of our energetic soul force of life alongside our physical life and world. But now I was mature enough and in a position to delve deeply into philosophical and spiritual realities. And as I did, I wrote my first book, Life is No Coincidence. I became an energy practitioner, Reiki energy healing, and developed into a medium who downloads a lot of information to help people understand their full potential and who they really are. And I wrote my second book, The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love. So we came into the same understanding and realization, just I was a little bit more fearful, and I was going to take the prescribed path, let's say, what socialization had shown me could be acceptable. And still, we found the same way eventually forward to understanding who we are as human beings and spiritual beings and how we wish and hope the progress of this world and the evolution of humanity goes. So you have mentioned in the book that you met many interesting people along the road, such as Dalai Lamas, specialists. But I was interested in this term you had, specialist in smoke, mirrors, and invisibility, and domestic solutions, Native American wise men, and many other strangely wonderful people. Can you tell us how any of these people or all of these people have influenced you?
That we don't have that kind of time in a half an hour, because that would take up hours to describe that, and that's in the book. What's more important, I think, is I should tell folks that these books are actually a funding project to raise money. All the profits from the books are going to sponsor Buddhist monks and nuns and other wisdom professionals. And the reason for that is that I did a bunch of projects for different causes. There was African famine relief that a governor and two senators and rock stars and pro sports teams got involved in, one for a Mexican orphanage and another one for homeless people. But I started noticing a root cause to all of this, and that cause was a lack of wisdom. You can be smart, intelligent, clever, or whatever you want to be, and still step on somebody, a homeless person on the way to the country club. But you can't be wise and do that. Wisdom and love and compassion are wrapped in the same package. Okay? So
beautifully
the point
said.
of all
Yes,
this,
beautifully
yeah,
said.
the point of all this is that these books were actually written as funding vehicles, and all profits from them are going to sponsor wisdom professionals, because I think if enough wisdom is graduated into the world and we increase the number of people that devote their life to teaching other folks about this kind of stuff, that would solve all these other satellite problems that revolve around that main one. Now, at www.fearlesspuppy.org, Fearless Puppy spelled just like it sounds, and .org at the end of it, there is more information about the project, sample chapters from the two books, a whole bunch of interviews and newspaper articles about previous projects I've done. But the most important would be, I mean, the books have 23 five-star reviews on Amazon between the two of them, so I think I accidentally wrote a couple of real good books. But the idea of this is that it's actually a funding project as much as a literary effort. So if anybody wants to go to the website, again, it's fearlesspuppy.org, they can get the information from there, And that they did a couple of sample chapters from the books too, but more than that, they can get the information about the actual project to fund wisdom teachers and why this is so important. I mean, I think it's obvious why it's so important. Anybody who reads a newspaper knows that we're seriously lacking wisdom in the world. You got a country that's shipping all kinds of bombs, people, and money overseas while their own people are really having a ragged time of it. And this is not the only place where that's done. I mean, any sort of wisdom wouldn't allow this to happen. Because again, you've got compassion and love in there with wisdom. There's a lot of clever and smart and crafty people around. But
let's describe wisdom for a minute. I will take you back to your book where you met a man, Paul, at the beginning of the book, who was in the middle of a bad divorce. He had lost his children. He was living alone in this big country house. And you spoke to him with words of wisdom that implied what he had to begin to do was to be happy. And then you wrote, all of your life has been responsibility and stress. Responsibility is a wonderful thing, but not to exaggerate it to the point where it makes your life a misery. The folks you are providing for, your children, give meaning to all the effort you put into taking care of them. But your children don't want you to be depressed, stressed out, or die young for them. Everyone is better off if you stay happy, stable, and alive for them. Simple, sensible, and seemingly true.
Well, yeah, and I'd say even more so, the main thing that I notice in Western culture is that everybody's trying to put 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound bag. It's just not going to work. You know, all this multitasking and stress, everybody's operating under stress. I know a lot of people who died of heart attacks at 50, and they didn't do any drugs and they didn't drink.
Right.
And they were just working at high-stress jobs and high-stress positions and high-stress families and high-stress neighborhoods where they had to keep up with the Joneses, and they thought they had all this image production instead of producing the actual humanity from within them. They were trying to produce an image to match up with the culture.
With the outside instead world, right.
Instead of trying to produce an internal compassion and reality that is the essence of what we are. They're covering it up with crap, and you get a hole in your life at that point because you're not real. And at that point, you keep trying to do more stuff and eat more stuff and drink more stuff and work harder and all of this stuff to fill that hole.
Yes.
And you can't
and
do it because you just...
is quite simple.
Your heart blows up, you know,
yeah.
And then you put 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound bag. Try it sometime. The seams are going to bust at about 6-7 pounds.
Well, I found it at about 42 when my heart simply hurt, and I realized that I was not fulfilling my life destiny and my purpose, which was to find this joy and share this joy and vision of life as we're talking about it without caring so much about the outside rewards of the world, but finding the true inner joy and peace within us that we were born with, and it is our divine right, and we were either given, it was either given away by us, our personal power, or taken away by the outside world in losing trust.
Well, it's a combination of both, but it's always a matter of giving it away, because even when people try to take it away from you, and they constantly will with advertising, with your boss telling you what you got to do, with your family telling you what you got to do, with all these societal standards to try to keep up with, you as an individual have to make the conscious decision, I know better. This is my life. I have to keep in touch with myself and keep it real. You know, because otherwise you get covered up by other people's crap instead of enjoying your own manifestation. And when that happens, you're sunk. You're already dead. You're the walking dead at that point.
Oh, that's
because
true.
You're covered.
And they have a lot of shows on television now that people sit and watch about the walking dead and the vampires and all this. This is alluding to the fact that if we don't live our life according to our own awakening pattern of knowing who we are, we will be like that. We will not
sleepwalking
through life.
a lot of the reality TV shows it up even more than the vampire shows, oddly enough. You know, because people look at that, and that's called reality TV. This is not a real life. This is not what people do if they're actually in touch with themselves. You know, it's
actually
it's
though it is a bit of a spoof on how some people are living. They are trying to take from others. They are trying to have things that are unnatural and not good for them. It's a spoof on life in a way, and it's quite popular now because there are many people awakening and realizing that this is not how we're meant to live, and we don't want to live like that. Now, I think you mentioned possibly that you had a near-death experience or out-of-body experience.
Well, it was an overdose, and I was pronounced dead in the hospital, and they were going to cart me away, and one doctor said, let me give him one more shot of adrenaline, because the first shot of adrenaline in the heart didn't bring me back, and they gave me the second shot, and then I woke up. Or at least that's what people tell me. I wasn't really conscious or anything. Obviously, I was, like, off in la-la land there. But all my friends told me what happened later after I got out and got to see them again. They said, shit, you were already gone.
All right, how did that experience affect you and what you chose to do perhaps next in your journey?
Now, everybody asked me that, but surprisingly enough, it had no... I mean, it did have long-term effect because I must have experienced something at that point that, you know, clicked in a little bit later on, but at the time I was so full of dope that I didn't know nothing. I mean, I just crawled out of there and went looking for more dope. I was determined to keep doing it until I was for real dead.
How old were you then?
Let's see, maybe... there's a couple of fuzzy decades back there, but I'm going to guess 17.
Oh, you were young, huh?
Yeah.
You were really young then. All right. So let's go on. You have traveled to many places. Can you tell us of a special place where the energy or connection to life was especially strong for you?
Yeah, in my own brain.
Oh!
It doesn't matter where you go. It matters who, you know. As well, where was it? Wayne Dyer, I think, said, you don't get what you want. You get who you are.
That's
so
great.
You know, wherever you go, I mean, obviously there are certain places that are a lot more conducive. I'm in Brattleboro, Vermont now, and that's like a wonderful place. There's Northampton, Massachusetts, right down the road. If anybody who's been to Berkeley, like, I don't know what it's like
California.
Now. I haven't been there for 30 years. But, and I was in, you know, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico's got a nice feel to it sometimes. And there's a lot of other places, you know, Ann Arbor, Michigan, Madison, mostly college towns where things are going on with younger people making progress. But of course, that was, you know, I'm not sure exactly if that's the same now as it has been over the past 50 years, because things have changed quite a bit.
No, there's still places that hold that energy of creation and learning and a cooperation between the youth and the different generations there. In a college community, you would find that, and it's nice to be part of that. But I want to say something.
But no matter where you go, there you are, and it's mainly you.
Yes.
And your conscious decision that you're going to rise above the caca, even if you're surrounded by it, even if you're neck deep in it.
That is exactly true, because once I was in a deep meditation, and I was asking if a certain place that I was working in was the best place for me to use my abilities and my growing wisdom, and you know that the answer that I heard was, it doesn't matter where you are. Wherever you are is where it's happening. So that's very much what you were saying. In the changes that we make within ourselves and the new realities that we create from within ourselves, with this wisdom and this growing awareness of who we are as both spiritual and physical beings, that's where it's all happening. So now you describe three types of communication that are possible when traveling with your hosts or when you're in the car with other people. Can you tell us something about types of communication and how we should all pay attention to what type of communication we're having with someone?
It's been a long time since I wrote the book. I don't remember exactly what you're talking about, but basically there's, you know, the polite talk where you're just talking about nothing. Oh, how did that sports team do, and what's going on with your car, and the hip bone's connected to the thigh bone, blah, blah, blah.
So tell us something about that.
Yeah, well, the deep conversation, obviously, can be deep or it can be just trendy, you know, somebody trying to use a bunch of new age jargon and make believe that they're in touch with spirit, or they are somewhat in touch, but they're not really grounded in it. If you're silent, the silence is the best, because then you're actually grounded. You got your both feet planted in the reality. That's actually the second book I wrote, Reincarnation Through Common Sense, is about the half a year I spent in a Buddhist temple in Southeast Asia. And that was a silent experience because nobody there spoke English and I didn't speak the language over there. And it was kind of unusual because I didn't go there to study Buddhism. I had a real rough time and they kind of adopted me and saved my life. And they told me, I don't have to do anything about studying the Buddhism. I can if I want to. But basically, just hang out and be happy was my job description there. And so it was really around that much silence, you start to notice these psycho-spiritual communications take place. And this ain't New Agey crap either. When I say psycho-spiritual communications, it's not as far-fetched. It may be just the language might turn a couple of people off. But there is no mother who hasn't walked into a room as her baby is about to cry. You know, it happens to everybody every day. It's just that people don't pay attention to it. So when they hear somebody talking about it, they think it's some kind of weird, otherworldly, astral plane-y kind of stuff.
No, it's very natural.
But it's everyday stuff.
Yeah, we're all connected to each other by this energetic thread. And we do feel other people's emotions. And that's a very wonderful thing because that's where love and compassion come from. We are looking for people to understand that a human connection is what can be made, even in silence, even in a glance, even in just sitting next to someone, even in touching someone's hand. A human connection can be made, and that's the truth of what true spirituality, or knowing oneself and knowing what life is about and the wisdom, it's all coming together in those connections. Now, you also describe good medicine, and I'd like to say something about that. Good medicine is good life. It includes mental development, peace, fearlessness, and a philosophy that overcomes negativity and drama. It focuses on the happiness and wisdom for all creatures. When Native Americans say medicine, it means something different than it does in modern civilization. Their definition of medicine is more multidimensional healing, meaning more than attacking the symptoms of illness or the physical body, but encompassing the fabric of life, interconnections, energy, and life force, aura purification, and energy fields. I want to thank you, Doug Ten Rose, author of Fearless Puppy on American Road, and Reincarnation Through Common Sense, for an honest, authentic look at how you followed your intuition and heart to guide your life through challenges and joy, and to be the master of your own soul journey. Read about Ten's encounters with numerous people who help him discover that life must be lived according to your own inner vision and life destiny. Go to fearlesspuppy.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, we have shared a life path, much like the one Forrest Gump followed in the movie Forrest Gump. Remember, life is like a box of chocolate, and you never know what you're going to get. However, as Ten found out, it is not as important as what you get, as what you give and share and enjoy in every interaction with each person and in finding the good within yourself and others. Ten and I would like you to remember, whether it is personal or organizational or family dynamics or national agendas, following your highest intuitions in alignment to universal spiritual laws, which include compassion, feelings of love and honor, will lead us to our best life and allow us to accept and surrender to any and all circumstances with courage and hope, moving always forward. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to hear the stories of courageous and insightful people as they seek the answers for healing and infinite love, as should we all. Please go to my website, CherylGlick.com, to listen to the radio page and also to find out more information about my newly released book, The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love. Thank you.